We are now moving on from medicine to another topic, and we're going to do this topic in order to introduce the next topic we're going to talk about. Next week we're going to talk about the idea of washing dishes and what the appropriate way is to wash dishes on Shabbos. This week we're not going to talk about that, but we have to get up to washing dishes on Shabbos by talking about a malacha called dush. Anybody know what it means to dush? Dush. Disha. What? Not to squeeze. And you'll see why I talk about squeezing, because I'll explain. Now, I actually was going to use, I needed a prop, but I couldn't find a place to get wheat. You know where you get, you guys looking for Rina?
Huh?
Are you looking for me? Oh, there's one here and one over there. So, yeah, and one over there. Okay. I actually tried to find wheat. You know, like, what kind of society we live in that you can't buy stalks of wheat? You know how hard it is to find stalks of wheat? Anybody know where you would get stalks of wheat nowadays? You're right, a craft store. But by the time I found out where it was too late for me to go get it. So maybe next week I'll have to demonstrate what disha is, what it means. Yeah, what it means to thresh. Okay, what is threshing, Cheryl?
What is threshing?
Yeah, how do you thresh?
I think there's a couple ways, but what you're doing is you're beating your stalks against the ground and the kernels fall out.
Right. Okay, very good.
Yeah.
It's interesting. How many malachos are there? How many principal acts of work are there on Shabbos?
39.
How do you know?
Because it's
where does it say so? What?
It says the Mishkan.
Right. Well, the Mishkan is only one opinion in the Gemara. There's a Masorah. There's a tradition about how many malachos there are. Right, that's passed down. Now, these 39 branch out into divisions and subdivisions and subdivisions, mm-hmm. but it starts with the original 39. Those are listed in the Mishnah on page 1. So I just thought it'd be interesting to see the Mishnah, to see where these all originate, and we'll see, actually, we've covered a number of them, at least the beginning ones. Avos Malachos Arbaim Chasher Achat. Avos Malachos means the principal main classes of activity of Malacha are 40 less 1. There are 39 malachos. By the way, what else are there 39 of in halacha, in Jewish law? 39 lashes. Very good. Right, there's 39 lashes. Anybody want to draw a similarity between the two? Neither do I. Okay. Did he? And then, and in 1991, when I was in Israel, the Iraqis lobbed 39 scuds at Israel in 1991. Interesting. Okay. So what are they? Hazorea, planting, sowing. Zorea means to plant seeds. Hachoresh, plowing. Kotzer, which is cutting. Me'amer, which is where are we? Binding seeds, binding them together. Dush, which is threshing. We're going to do today, we're going to start. Zorea is winnowing. Okay, haborer. What is bower? We did that. Tochein?
Grinding.
Alright, this is good. It's making me feel good. Okay. Merakade? Sifting. Well, sifting we didn't do, but there's not much to do with sifting. There's a little bit we'll talk about. Lush?
Kneading,
we did. Remember that we talked about the idea of between a thick mixture and a thin mixture. Oatmeal versus, I don't know, baby food or whatever.
Wouldn't sifting be a subcategory of sorting?
Excellent butter. Question. The Gemara asks that question. What's the difference between the three? And the Gemara gives a very straightforward answer that they were considered basic principle differences if they were done differently in the preparation of the flour. Okay? V'ha ofre and beriging. Ofre, what do we call ofre in our context? How do we term it halachically?
Bishul.
Cooking, bishul. Right. Ofre, really, we consider it to be bishul. It means preparing food by means of heat. And we have discussed that exhaustively. We've talked about that exhaustively. Mm-hmm. So I asked a widow one Friday night. It used to be on Friday night. I was going through these malachos. I said, how can one violate, 7 or 8 malachos at one time on Shabbos, avos malachos at one time? And it's pretty hard to do. Can anybody guess? The answer is driving a combine.
Okay.
Rabbi Riviat's book. Anybody ever seen one of these combines? So a combine, what it does is it cuts the grain, it paddles grain into a moving platform, it threshes in a threshing cylinder, it then separates the grain from the straw, The blower separates the chaff from the grain. I mean, he's doing all these. Can you imagine? Isn't that amazing? To create an invention that could do all these things at one time. And then it cleans the grain, and the straw comes out back. The wind spokes spread them evenly over the field.
And
it spreads the field. One, two, three, four, five malachos of planting. And then there's also, of course, obviously,
driving,
which is kindling and extinguishing. Yeah. So seven. You have at least seven malachos. So if you really want to get God angry, right, on Shabbos, and you want to do it the Shabbos way, go drive a combine.
Drive one of those to
show. No, to show won't help you. You have to do it in the field. Right, you know? Anyway, okay. So we're going to start, today we're going to talk about threshing. So you'll say, well, Rabbi, that's very nice. What does threshing have to do with peanuts and lemons and limes, kind of reeky lemons and limes, and an orange? And we're going to talk about grapes and olives that I didn't have any. It's just not grape season. Okay, so what? What? Very good. Yes. Yeah. So you're using some analogy people don't know yet. We'll talk about it in a second. Okay? So let's read the Gemara says, if you want to list read the whole rest of the list, we're going to come back to this Mishnah probably time and time again as we go through the different Melachos of Shabbos. But now you're just seeing we spent half a year, we spent a whole semester on Monday nights, and how many Melachos did we get through? We got through Borer, Tochen, Lush, and Ofet. 4 out of 39. So this class will be meeting for the next 18 years. Anyway, okay. All right. So what about dash? What is threshing? So threshing, as Cheryl explained before, is the act of, and it can be done a number of ways. You can beat the stuff. That's a very, very inefficient way of doing it. It takes a tremendous amount of energy. So they used to not pick up the stalks, but used to have these sticks that they would beat with. Mm-hmm. Or another way of doing it is, what's a very simple way of threshing? This day, they would do it until relatively recently.
Walking on
them. Right. Yeah. And not necessarily people. The best the best way of threshing is animals. If you've ever seen, they'd have these things where the animals are walking in circles, and you would put the grain on the ground, and you want the animal to trample on the grain. Why? Because in the way wheat grows, and obviously I didn't get wheat for you, the wheat grows in stalks, and you have to separate the grain from the stalk. That's the first act you need to do to separate it. Because without which you can't get to the grains and you can't separate anything else. So you have to beat it down in a very powerful way in order to separate that grain. So let's see what dash is. It says the Gemara on the bottom of page 1. Hadash. This is the entire Psalm discussion mostly of the Gemara of dash. Tana, we learn in the Brisa. Hadash, the Haminafet, the Haminafet, Kula Malacha Achasim. So whether you're threshing, or your minafet, or minafet. Let's see what minafet is. No, Rashi says, minafet is pishtan begivolin, flax in bundles. So it doesn't matter if it's wheat, or flax grows on the, how does flax grow? Anybody know? By the way, what do you do with flax? What's flax good for?
Make linen,
right. So what is flax, how do you get it? Flax grows on the tree. It's a flax tree. But you have to get the flax off of the tree. So the easiest way to do it would not be to shear it, would be to beat it. Haminafet. Haminafet is temer gefen, which is cotton. So you're picking cotton. Mm-hmm. All of those things are the av malacha of dash. All of those things are dash. You learn a few important things. First of all, dash is not only for foods. Okay? The malacha of threshing applies to other things as well, not just foods. In fact, the Gemara says that there's a halacha that the dash works only for what the Gemara calls gidulei karka, which is things that are growing in the ground or things that are dependent on things that grow in the ground. So as we're going to see, there, you could have dash. You couldn't do dash with, I don't know, with something synthetic. But you could do it with, for example, milking a cow is considered a malacha of dash. Well, Eddie's looking at me funny.
Excellent.
Shaking an apple tree is also excellent. An excellent example.
By milking a cow, will that...
Well, we'll talk about it. So let's find out what it is. Okay. Turn to page 2, please. Yes. Nursing is. So but you're allowed to nurse, right? But we'll come to this next week when it comes to things like, for example, a woman has to express milk. Okay? You have to know how to do it, otherwise it's prohibited in specific ways because of this malacha of dash.
But you also like to milk a cow.
For its own sake.
Right.
But what do you do with that milk?
I guess they throw it out.
Correct. Why?
So you shouldn't benefit.
Correct. Correct. So you're only doing it for the cow's sake, but not for the milk's sake, which is interesting. We'll talk about that next week again. So the Mishnah says, covetousness, let's say I have this beautiful barrel of wine, and it's got a crack in it, and it's going to go all to waste. Mm-hmm. I have this nice cask of wine. If you ever see, you know, when they make wine, anybody ever go up to like the Golan winery?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, these wine casks are magnificent, but they break. Okay? So the Mishnah says, Matfilin heimena mizon shalosh seudos. You're allowed to save from it the food of three seudot, of three meals. Why not more? Oh, you need for Shabbos, right. So, well, I'm not going to talk about this specific Mishnah. Another one of my topics I want to cover is this idea of Hachana Lachol, preparing on Shabbos for after Shabbos. What's prohibited and what's not, that's a total different class. And you can say to other people, you guys, hey, you want wine for Shabbos? Come take some, and, you know, before it gets all lost, what are you not allowed to do? Yisfog. What's a sponge? Sop it up with what? Soak it up with a sponge. Why?
That's what a sponge is.
Why can't you soak it up with a sponge?
Then because then you're going to get out.
Very good. Right. And so now Mishnah continues on that topic. And shochatin et haperot lahotzi mahen maskin. They're not allowed to squeeze fruit in order to derive from it juice. Okay? The in yasu miatzman asurim. And if they emerge on their own, then those juices that emerge on their own are prohibited. Now, we don't really see this very often. If I have like a cluster of grapes, you don't see that the grapes sort of seep out juice, mm-hmm. right? But you would if you bought a specific type of grape. What type of grape? A wine grape. Right. If you bought a wine grape, those are made for, they're specifically cultivated to produce juice. Our grapes that we buy are for eating, so they don't really, has anybody ever seen their, I don't know, grapes? Combust, like self explode. I don't know.
Sprinkle sugar on it.
Yes. So we'll talk about that in a second. We'll talk about slicing, but we're talking. But we're actually going to talk about which specific fruit. Then it's prohibited. Rabbi Huda Omer, Rabbi Huda says, "Im laochalin hayotzer hanutar." If the food is a food that you're going to eat, an eating food, then it's permitted. The im la maskin, and if it's for liquid for drink. Hayotze mehen asur. That which emerges, derived from it, is forbidden. Meaning, I'm going to have this orange, so I'm cutting it up. Why am I cutting it up? To eat the orange. Well, we'll see what it really means. But if it's for food purposes, if I cut it up, like you said, an apple to sprinkle on and some juice drips out, then you can drink the juice. But if I'm using it to make apple juice, theoretically, we'll see, then that's prohibited. Okay, let's stop here and read the Kahati. Yeah.
As far as the three meals, wouldn't that depend on the time of day? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, not more than.
Well, let's say it's in the afternoon. You could only take one for Suda.
I'll be honest with you, I didn't study this in depth in the Gemara, so I can't answer you off the top of my head.
Okay.
Meaning, is it three meals? Is that the, I don't know.
Because if it's the three meals of Shabbos, it would have to be.
Correct. I mean, this should theoretically explain it. Okay, this is the Kahati version of Mishrayos. Okay? It's very interesting. You almost never find this type of phenomenon. Nowadays in the Jewish printing world, so all they do are translations now. It's very rare that someone can write an original work that will be almost universally accepted. Okay, especially on something that's like the Mishnah. For example, if you have the Gemara, I can't think of anybody that wrote something on the Gemara that's an original work that's become, that everybody uses. So, but when it comes to Mishnah, the Mishnah was really largely inaccessible to most people until a man named Rabbi Pinchas Kahati came along in the mid-1950s, and he wrote a Hebrew translation, an explanation of the Mishnah. His work, you'll find a Kahati Mishnah everywhere, from Young Israel to Yeshiva Gedola. Everybody has a Kahati Mishnayos, and they actually recently translated it to English. This was actually donated by the Shrams in memory of Mr. Schneidman, and we thank him. But the Kahati explanation is really, really wonderful, and it really opens up the Mishnah to everyone, even more than Art Scroll. Sorry, take that off the tape. Right. Art Scroll could be confusing. It's clear and really wonderful to follow, and if you're looking for a way of studying Mishnah, I highly, highly recommend the Kahati, and you'll see why in a second. So there's the Mishnah. And Sochdin, one may not press fruit on Shabbat to extract from it liquids, for the pressing of the fruit is a derivative of threshing. So that's the term Sochatin, meaning shchita. You've ever heard the term shchita? Squeezing. Okay, squeezing is not permitted on Shabbos, and it has many, many ramifications. Can somebody think of a few of them, theoretically?
Toothpaste.
What?
Dishwashing with a sponge.
Toothpaste. toothpaste, squeezing the tube. Never thought of that. Squeezing your hair.
That way they don't use the wipes, the baby wipes.
Baby wipes.
Oh, baby wipes.
Okay, what else? We're getting to all these things. So now you understand, in order to get those, what?
With a
sponge or a pad. Uh-huh. What about, forget toothpaste, what about toothbrushes? Would that involve squeezing also? We will talk about it. We're going to talk about it. All of these things have ramifications. What about cleaning up a spill? So obviously, remember, in this class, we're not going to talk about it, but you can't do this, can't do that. But how do you do it in a permissible way? All of these things are elements of shita and squeezing. So here we come along and say that, what about, and another interesting case, I open up a can of tuna fish. Well, we'll talk about whether you can do that either. But the can of tuna fish was open, right? So now I would like to, what? I want to squeeze out the water, right? Because nobody likes watery, soggy tuna fish. Now, what do you do? You just pour it out?
No.
Most people, you squish down. You push down.
Yeah?
No?
No.
No, against the same top or something.
You have to have tuna fish. Sorry. Okay. No. That's another thing. Are you allowed to do that or not? And there are so many different ramifications of squeezing things out in order to use them on Shabbos
that people use.
Or food items are considered, things that are derivatives of things that grow out of the ground. But we're going to talk about it.
So your hair doesn't grow out of the ground.
I know. Ein gisha, there's no dush, but now that's midoraita. But what about the rabbinic prohibitions there are? There are many, many rabbinic prohibitions. Yeah. Okay. What about the rabbanas? Okay. So let's come to the derivative of threshing. So that's why I had to start with threshing. And even if the liquids come out by themselves, they're prohibited to be drunk on this Shabbat, lest one come to squeeze the fruit with his hands on Shabbat. The rabbis were afraid that if you could drink, let's say I had a whole thing of grapes, right? And then at the bottom of my big tub of grapes, I had a little bit of grape juice. So I'm going to pour it into a cup, and lo and behold, I need a little bit more in order to get to make kiddush. So I'm going to maybe come to squeeze the grape. So they said, don't do that, because if you can't drink the juice, then you're not going to come to squeeze it. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda says, if the fruit stands ready for food to be eaten, what comes out of them is permitted to be drunk on the Shabbat, for since one does not want the liquids to ooze from the fruit, will you not fear lest he will press it? But if the fruit stands ready for drink, what comes forth from it is prohibited. As one is pleased by the liquids oozing out, the sages prohibited this liquid lest he come to press the fruit directly on Shabbat. So you see, there's an argument about what are the rabbis' goals or what did they feel it was important to decree that a person should not use on Shabbat. The Gemara explains, this is where the Kahati is wonderful. The Gemara explains that in the case of olive and grapes, even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that even if they stand ready for eating, what oozes from them is prohibited. For these fruits stand ready mainly to be pressed. Okay, so specifically olives and grapes are forbidden midaraita to drink, to have the liquid that oozes from them on Shabbat. Other types of fruits, however, which are only for eating, even the sages agree that the juice which oozes from them is permitted, for they are not normally pressed. Okay, the sages of Yehuda disagreed only about soft fruits like mulberries and pomegranates, but Yehuda likened them to other fruits, while the sages likened them to olive and grapes. The halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda. Yes.
So, for example, if you're preparing a food stuff,
right,
and you prepare it, and it includes grapes,
right,
inevitably at the bottom of your dish, there's always
right. I think that grape juice would probably be nullified vis-a-vis the rest of the fruit. Right, especially usually.
Try to avoid grapes in the.
No, I don't think so. What does mean though is if you're going to cut up grapes, very often. By the way, this is a very important safety tip. I have a friend, an acquaintance in New York, who was feeding her daughter grapes, and she choked on them and was killed. A 3-year-old. So it really brought us home. If you're ever serving any child, grape tomatoes or grapes or anything of that nature, you don't want to make a mistake. Always cut it. Mm-hmm. Always make it small enough that you should, you only learn when something terrible happens, unfortunately. Right, don't cut them at the same size. If you've ever seen I'm sure you have in the yard, seen a child choking, it's unbelievably frightening. You don't, there's nothing you can do and you're sort of helpless. So you gotta just be aware and know beforehand to make sure to cut it up.
That's why Benny gives lollipops to the little kids, because
I remember quite...
Josh Weil, Rabbi Weil's oldest.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember quite clearly, I've seen it, you know, that it happened all the time. But back way back when they stopped, when they used to give those round sucking candies.
Right, that's why he stopped that for some smaller kids and he gives them lollipops.
Right, right. I mean, and for us older kids. No, we don't eat that. Right. Right, well, we don't get any, right. Okay. So when you're cutting the grapes, it's a good thing to not to cut them, to cut them in your hand and not to cut them on a plate because if some juice does accumulate, you're not allowed to drink the juice. Just to be aware of that, that juice is considered, I guess, mukta or forbidden, prohibited to drink because of this gzeira on Shabbos. Just a little tidbit to be aware of.
But it's all right if it's in a fruit.
I think it's okay if it's in fruit salad. Yeah. You shouldn't squeeze them. You know, definitely not squeeze them, but if you're... You know, most of the times when you're making fruit salad like that, you put the grapes straight in anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so then it really shouldn't be much of a problem, I don't think. It shouldn't be a problem at all. Okay, so now we turn... So you see that the Kahati explained the Mishnah so clearly, and he also explains the issues in the Gemara that come out to make the Mishnah a little bit more understandable. Says the Gemara. We'll run to the Rambam. Okay, because the Kahati really summarized... I was going to bring you the Gemara, but you can thank Rabbi Kahati for summarizing it so well that it's really not imperative in order to understand the issue. Says the Rambam, Hashoche et apero mehotzine mehen chayav mishum mefarek. Okay, if one squeezes fruit in order to remove their juice, one is chayav mishum mefarek. The Rambam is very stringent on this issue and says that is a tolda of dash and it's a malecha deoraita.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that should be a minimum amount in the amount that you squeeze out. It has to be a small amount, like a small, what's a grogeratine? A small nut, a legume? What is it? A grogerat is like a bean or something? I don't remember. Okay. What? Yeah, I think so. A legume, I think. Okay, Brother Rambam says, V'ein chayavin min ha-Torah, you're not obligated from the Torah, ela al drichat zeitim, V'anavim bilvad. The only time you're chayavim haTorah is if you squeeze what?
Stomp
olives
or
grapes. Not just stomping. Drichat is the way they would do it. They used to stomp on them. But if you would squeeze olive or grapes. So fortunately, that's not a big deal for us because I don't know anybody that presses their own grapes. You know anybody that makes their own wine?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Larry Single used to make
it. Larry Mason. Really?
Larry used to do it. Yeah.
Okay, so? Did anybody ever make matzah? Did they ever bake matzah here?
Yes, I used to do it by option.
So why'd they stop? Because it was probably more expensive?
Well, I don't know what happened eventually. Remember there was an oven outside option's house?
I think that's like I was thinking about it. That's such an educational thing. It could be especially for kids.
The matzo factory.
Right, but I mean, there's a big difference between fooling around with matzo and throwing it away and baking the matzo that you're going to eat. You know, to have matzo that you really made. It's part of the whole process. Anyway, that's another little project that I probably won't do. Okay. Listen to what the Rambam says, though. Interestingly enough. What? Umutar lishchot eshkol shel anavim letoch ha'ochel. But you're allowed to squeeze a cluster of grapes into your food.
So it makes, or I mean, like, for the
and what? So if I have, what would be good if I squeeze grapes into it?
You want?
No. I have peppers.
Yeah.
And I want some delicious grape flavor for my peppers.
Like vinegar. I mean, it's... No.
Okay, how about this? Well, grapes. We're talking about grapes. Grapes is more chamor than lemons. We're not the grapes. They are of the d'oraisa food. So the Rambam says, seemingly, I could take the grapes and squeeze them so I could have grape-flavored lemon.
Yeah.
Or maybe they use grape juice as a salad dressing.
I'm sure they did. Yeah, as a condiment.
Yeah.
Right? So, or your fruit salad. So maybe could I squeeze the grapes into the fruit salad? Because that's exactly when you would use it. Went to the Rambam, yes. So everybody like that, so it makes sense, right?
No.
Oh, right. Why not, Eddie? I'm waiting for you, noob.
if it's for rice that you're not allowed to do it, then how come here you are allowed to do it?
Good.
Why is his opinion is that you are allowed to do it?
Good, very good. Meaning, if shchita is squeezing, is the malacha, how all of a sudden are you telling me that the malacha is permitted to be done into food?
You're not drinking it. You're just eating it with the other
food. Okay, so Eddie... Counter? You're not drinking it. You're just
so good.
So what?
But I thought that previously it said that if the person is drinking.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So it's interesting. It's interesting. Remember, let's look back at the Kahati for a second. The Gemara explains, look back at the Kahati in the middle, where the Gemara explains, it says, even in the case of olive and grapes, even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that if they stand ready for eating, what oozes from them is prohibited.
Uh-huh.
So Rabbi Yehuda agreed that even if the grapes were for food, for fruit salad, if you squeeze them out, or the juice that's seed from them is prohibited. So how then, asks Eddie, very good question, how then are you telling me that I can take my grapes and squeeze them into the fruit
because
salad?
Because you wouldn't drink it.
You're not going to eat
it. You're not drinking it.
So, well, that's an important question. So what?
Yeah, because the prohibition is for drinking.
The prohibition of threshing wheat is for drinking?
I know.
This all stems from the prohibition of threshing wheat.
Okay.
Right?
You got a plate here, and you got a cup here.
Right.
One contains nothing. You're squeezing, you get juice.
Yeah.
Drink. Here,
that,
right.
That was a malacha de araisa. That was a malacha de araisa, and that was permitted.
Yeah.
Right. That's what the Rambam seems to say.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, as long as you got it clear. Eddie illustrated it perfectly well. Okay, and we're going to see with my lemon example also.
Why you're allowed to
do it? Oh, you want to know why, too? Well, I'll tell you. I'll explain. Okay, we're going to get to that. Okay, let's just finish the Rambam. So you're aware of the paradox Eddie discovered. If I take the juice and I drink it for the juice, the Rambam said, I violated a Torah prohibition. And if I did it on purpose, skila, bad, they would put me to death for that. Okay, that's a malacha d'oraisa to violate. Now, of course, if I do it into my fruit salad, let's go eat the fruit salad. Skoyach, very good. Nice job. How could that be? So Rambam continues. Why? Shemashke haba le'ochel, because liquid that enters into food, ochel hu. It has a halachic din of food. The nimsa, he explains the next thing. Kemefarek ochel mi ochel. What am I doing? I'm being mefarek. I am removing or just transferring from one form of food to another form of food. Mm-hmm. What is the malacha of dash? Let's see. Turn to page 1 second. Turn to page 2.
Yeah.
What is? I'm sorry. 3. Sorry. What is the malacha of dash? What's prohibited about dash? Why is squeezing like threshing? What is the difference? So now you have to understand.
You're separating the liquid from the acting.
No, the salt.
Wait, you don't get the liquid because we need a broader definition in order to be all encompassing.
We're extracting it.
We're extracting like the main thing, something else.
Good. What you want and what you don't. I mean,
similar. Well, similar. What?
Now that was good. He said they're separating.
Yeah. It's,
yeah, but it's not boreware. Boreware is separate. But it's what is it?
Like with the weed, you want the kernels to come off from the main stalk.
Correct.
Like with the sponge, you want the water out of the sponge. You're removing.
Correct.
What you don't want.
Or what you do want, we'll see. Mm-hmm. But you're extracting something from something else.
Mm-hmm.
It's an act of extraction.
If you can do this with grapes, can you do it with olives to make an olive oil?
Apparently so. Sure. Yeah. Mm. If you squeeze olives, is it straight olive oil? That is just that to what olive oil is?
You need a lot of olive oil.
Yeah, that's what it is. Theoretically, you could. Apparently, you could. That's what the Rambam says. Let's see. This is a book called the Arach HaShulchan. This is the top of page 3. There's no vowels in it because nobody ever reprinted the Arach HaShulchan with vowels. The Arach HaShulchan was written by... I don't remember anymore. What? Baruch Levi Epstein?
No, his father.
The father of the author of the Torah Tanima.
Yeah.
Right. The father, I knew it was somebody. He wrote it in the... I knew it was somebody.
Sure.
Right. Somebody had to write it. He wrote it in the late 1800s, not a long time ago. And he was somewhat controversial because his opinions were not universally accepted. But if you're ever learning halacha and you want to sort of understand the background, sometimes you can find it in this book, the Arach HaShulchan. Says the Arach HaShulchan, the Toldotayim, Toldat Dash. What is a Tolda? Is a derivative malacha. There's the av malacha, and then there's toldat. Toldat means a derivative. Katab HaRambam, Beperek Chet, Rambam writes in the 8th chapter of Halachos Shabbos, the mefarek who toldat dash. Mefarek means, in our case, it is squeezing. Is a derivative of dash. Yishum didisa, what is disa, what is threshing? Hu mafrish hatrua mehashibalim. You are separating, exactly what Steve said, separating the grain from the sheaves. The act of squishing on that grain, I wish I had the grain here, it would have been more illustrated. The act of squishing the grain is what separates, it's the act of separating the thing that you're going to need from the thing that which you don't need. Now, interestingly enough, in our case, you have the act of separating, you don't get anything out of it. What do you do with the grain once you've done the threshing? What do you have to do to it?
Winnow it.
You have to winnow it, you have to throw it up.
Uh-huh.
Right? You haven't even removed one from the other.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
The act of dash is just the act of separation, whether you get something from it or not.
By the way, it's not prohibited separating Shabbos.
But this is not...
Yeah, this is prohibited. You mean it is in certain contexts. No, this is not... You mean like borrow, you're allowed to do right before you want to take it. Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but this you're not allowed to do at any time. You're not allowed to thresh at any time. Okay? So therefore, one second, v'lachen, third line, second word on the line. Kol mefarek. Any type of mifarek, of squeezing, shemafrish davar me davar, where you're separating one thing from another thing, have tolda, is a derivative, etc., etc. So I don't want to read the rest of it because, what? I don't want to read the rest of it because we're going to get to these things a little later on, but that's the definition of mifarek. So therefore the Rambam says, and this is brought down from the Gemara, that when I take my grape and I squeeze it into my salad, because it was food, and it remains food, a condiment of food, therefore it was not a prohibited activity. You only transferred it from one locale to the other. The prohibition would come when I take a grape, and I want to take the juice that was in the grape, and remove it, and make it something else. Mm-hmm. That's what would be prohibited. Okay? Again, it's halachically defined prohibited behavior. We come back to this a lot. What's that?
Talmudic logic.
Yeah, right. I mean, and that's what the Torah prohibited. But here, because it started as a form of ohel, of food, and it ended up as food, just a condiment of food, therefore it is permitted.
Permitted.
It is permitted.
Is that like lime and lemons?
We're going to get to lime and lemons. Okay, except lime and lemons are on the Rabbanon level. Because the only two things that are D'oraita, that are on the Torah level, are... What are the only two foods at the Torah?
Grapes and olives.
Why grapes and olives? Why specifically those?
Because the purpose of the fruit is making...
Very interesting. Rabbi Rivian explains very, very well. See, let me expand the page. He explains it so nicely.
Right, the main purpose of both is making...
Grapes and olives, I'll read it from you. Right, he explains why. It's not just Sivaminim, because then what about fig juice? He said also have fig juice and date juice also.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because they're not all dried when you get dates. He says, grapes and olives are different from other types of fruits, as they are distinguished especially for their juice. Of all fruits, only the juices of olives and grapes are halachically considered drinks in the halachic sense. Explains. There are seven liquids of special halachic importance known as the seven principal drinks, Zayin Maskin, and those have to do with ritual impurity of Trima and Tara. They are wine, bee's honey, olive oil, milk, dew, blood, and water. And we're going to see you could do Nefarek with the Rambam writes, actually, that if I injure you, let's say I stab you and squeeze out the blood, that's a halacha of dush, of nefari. Right? You're not allowed to do that. Aside from the stabbing.
So I can't drink the blood?
What? So what's an important halacha? Excuse me. What's an important halacha ramification of that?
Can't you drink blood?
No, well, you can't drink blood. I just saw you an interesting question. To throw you off. Let's say, God forbid, you're stuck on the side of a mountain. Right? You and your friend, right? You know, like one of those movies or whatever.
No.
Okay? And your friend dies, and his pet pig dies. So you have a choice of eating your friend or eating the pig. Which is more halakhically prohibited?
Oh, no.
What?
Friend.
It's not clear. I'm sorry to push you out, okay? Okay. But what's the ramification of that, of knowing that drawing blood is a malacha d'oraita? That's a ramification. We spoke about it last week. If someone is sick, but they're not deathly ill, remember we said you could violate malachas d'rabbanan, but you can't violate malachas d'oraita. So perhaps if they needed an infusion, right, an IV draws blood intravenously. So unless they need that, unless they're deathly ill, unless they're seriously ill, sakana, where there's a danger, you wouldn't be allowed to insert an IV just because. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, hopefully your doctor wouldn't throw the knife just because, because that's really painful. But, you know, but you have to know, your EMT has to know under which situation would it be permitted and which wouldn't it. Sometimes they'll say, oh, you're doing okay, let's just run an IV and we'll admit you. So if you're right, you know, you have to know what would be prohibited and what wouldn't be. Mm-hmm. And Rambam says, if this is a Tolda Abdash and would be prohibited, mi de o raita. Okay, so you, all these things have ramifications in real life, even if it seems somewhat gross. Okay. Yeah.
You'd have to ask Jerry, but I think it's procedure, isn't it?
They always run an IV?
That they put in an IV just so that if something happens, they have an open line.
Well, they only put an IV if they're going to bring you into the hospital.
Right.
Right? So if someone is going to the hospital, if you have the ability, if they think that you need to drive to the hospital, then you have the halach din of a chola sheyesh bo sakana, so they do what they need to do. So again, all these things usually tie together. So, but someone who's in these fields, a doctor, has to know these things. Because it becomes very, very serious. You know, we talk about it with doctors, that they have to know what they can do and what they can't do, and they shouldn't just say, well, Shabbos, I can do whatever I want. Yeah, fine.
We're mentioning snake bite.
Yeah.
Because you don't know if it's poison or not.
Not to call the Shiesh Bo Sakana. Do me a favor, pick up the phone. What? Is that what you have to do?
Yeah.
Ideally.
Have you done it?
Yeah. Oh, I never done it. No, you need a tourniquet, and you do a cat on the inside and try to spit it out.
Great. Another reason why I'm not a doctor.
I've never done it either. So.
Practical issue is that a vampire can't do his thing.
Right, a vampire is forbidden on Shabbos. That's right. Yeah, Steve, is somebody going to ask something? Was he going to ask something?
I read someplace that the Mishkan doesn't have poison.
That's not true.
It's not true.
No, that's true. The Mishkan did not have poisonous snakes?
Mishkan.
Mishkan.
I thought you said the Mishkan because that's the
same thing.
Right. Yeah, they have scorpions too. Very serious. No, you have to be very careful. They have scorpions are a problem in Israel.
No,
great. Okay. Yeah. What?
No, that's fine.
Michigan. Okay. So let's turn to the Shulchan Aruch because that's where we find the halacha. So the Shulchan Aruch, it just boils down to this in sheet. This is on the bottom of page 3. The middle of page 3. Zeitim va'anavim, olives and grapes, asur l'shachkan. Right, you're not allowed to squeeze them. Right? Where did we get that from? Oh. We got that from the Mishnah. What I'd like to show you is you have the progression from the original Mishnah about threshing to another Mishnah about squeezing grapes. We saw it in the Rambam, and now we see it in the Shulchan Aruch in Rabbi Yosef Karo's code. V'im yasu mi'atzman, and if the drink came out on its own, asurin, they're prohibited. Afilo hayu omdin ela la'achila, even if you're only going to just eat it. That's grapes, because remember the Kahati explained that Rabbi Yehuda agreed about grapes and olives, and he disagreed about other foods. The tutim, the rimonim. Tutim are berries, and rimonim are pomegranates. Why do they use that example? Because in the Talmud, that was the example of what they used to squeeze for juice. They would squeeze pomegranates. Anybody ever squeeze a pomegranate for juice?
Yeah.
Neither do I, but it probably is very good.
It is?
Right, probably very good. Okay? Asur l'shachtan, but strawberries, mulberries, and pomegranates, you're not allowed to squeeze them. The im yatsu me'atzman, but if they emerge on their own, im omdim la'achila mutar, v'im omdim la'mashkim asur. So if it's a fruit that normally you would squeeze for its juice, then it's prohibited to drink that juice. If it's a fruit you would use for its food, then it would be permitted. So what's an excellent example of this? This is an orange. What kind of orange is this?
Navel.
Navel orange. What's it used for?
Eating.
Right. So if I had taken a navel orange and I cut it, right? So that's going to... Oh, sorry. What immediately happens? Although I'm old, if I cut enough of these, I'll get some juice. Right? So can I drink that juice? Now you'll say, you know, you'll say, Rabbi, what's the big deal? Why did you smell a lot of juice? So first of all, you have to think about this. The produce that we have, the amount of produce we have, is so far above and beyond what anybody ever could imagine having available to them at any time. The idea that I have an orange in the dead of winter in Michigan is an unbelievable thing. How would they get oranges? You know what kind of produce they ate in Michigan in the dead of winter up until the advent of the automobile?
Acorns.
Squirrel meat.
They ate pickled fruit. Canned, you know, whatever. Or candied peaches or whatever they could have. This idea of fresh fruit was unbelievable. So if you had an orange and you cut off 5 oranges and there's juice on the bottom, that was very healthy. You were going to drink it. You weren't going to waste any of it. So the halakha to tell you that you shouldn't or that you could, that was a very important halakha that people had to be aware of. Okay. On the other hand, now I have this fruit, but if I wanted to drink, anybody have a cup that they're not using? Thank you. Now, if I wanted to use my... Now, if it was a juice orange, then I would not be able to use the juice.
Mm-hmm.
But I cannot do this on Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
All right? I shouldn't anyway. Oh, you got a decent amount. I actually... We used to have a juicer, but we threw it away. And then I called Aviva, who couldn't be here tonight, and said, do you have a juicer that I can borrow? And she said no. She threw it away, and then she discovered that it's much cheaper to buy Tropicana orange juice. What stuff is this? Tell me how it is. What?
Tastes like orange
juice. What is Tropicana?
No, what's your dish?
Dish? Why?
There's no chemicals.
No chemicals. Okay. So if I'm not allowed to squeeze oranges, for sure you're not allowed to squeeze oranges on Shabbos. Okay? The bottom line, what comes out, well, let's read again. Okay? We mentioned the Atzman, if it came out in its own third line, Imam Gim Lachila Mutar. So since this is really an eating orange, it's permitted. Okay? The Imam Gim Lamaskim, but if it's for drinking, then it's Asur. Okay.
What about dropping a piece of lemon in your tea?
We'll talk about it. Very good question. Usha'ar kol peirot, every other fruit is mutar l'sachdan.
But you can squeeze them?
Every other fruit. Now, here's the only trick. It sounds more permissive than it really is. Says the Rama, Hagah, says the Rama. U'b'makom shenahagu l'shchot eze peirot l'shtot meimav, in a place where they have the custom to squeeze any other kind of fruit,
mm-hmm.
whether they do it for thirst or for pleasure, gino kitutim v'rimonim. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, any other fruit that they would squeeze out for juice, what kind of fruit do they squeeze out for juice here today?
Banana
juice. I'm sure you have banana juice.
Oh, yeah.
Carrots, tomatoes, apples. You name a fruit.
They squeeze it. They put them through a fruit.
Yeah. How do you squeeze a banana?
Cherries, raspberries, grapes is one of the issues here, right?
Cranberry.
Can you listen? Can somebody name a fruit that they don't, that normally is not squeezed for juice? Pineapple for sure, pineapple juice, grapefruit, pear, they have juice.
No,
banana juice doesn't exist. Like, you can't really... We talked about squeezing the banana in when we talked about grinding. Right. What else?
On top of the
canvas.
Yeah.
No, nobody speaks of sabras. That's gross. It has... What fruit don't you use? It's a very simple one. What?
Pomelo?
You're close. Anybody ever squeeze a cantaloupe for the juice?
Or what?
Or watermelon?
Watermelon? But if you started the watermelon, you have...
Nobody, I've never seen watermelon juice marketing. I don't even know why.
But if you
started
the watermelon, you have to do it.
What? Interesting. But if they do it just for health reasons, not because you actually people want to drink it, then it's permitted. Then it'd be permitted. Yeah. So the example of Rabbi Ribbik is, interestingly enough, he says, is melons. Nobody really squeezes. You don't really see anybody marketing melon juice. But you think that they would. It's very interesting when nobody markets watermelon juice. What? They will. What? Yeah, probably not worth it. So then you could squeeze that on Shabbos, but don't get me wrong, I don't really know why you'd want to. Okay? Yeah, you can squeeze it in with your hands. You can mesh it up.
Well, what about coconut milk?
Coconut.
How would you squeeze that out?
You don't. You pour it out. You have to break the coconut.
So that's not squeezing, and you're just eating it. Why would that be okay? Okay, so you have three tasks. So if you're writing this down, you have three levels of prohibition. You have those which are prohibited according to the Torah, mm-hmm. which are...
Just the
grapes and olives. Yeah, those that are prohibited, midirabanan, which is rabbinically, which is good, tutim, which is berries or pomegranates
or
anything else, right? Oranges, apple juice, anything else. And then you have those things which are totally permitted, which would be melons, I don't know. Avocado. Squeeze it out. Tell me what you get. Cucumber. Squeeze out your cucumber.
Avocado.
Right. No, he says anything which was customary that we sweet in our time.
Oranges weren't known to them either.
Correct. Anything that we squeeze in our time that's normal for us to squeeze, why? Because it's a gzeira. The rabbis would go there. Anything that we would squeeze, they just use their mulberries as an example of what they used to squeeze. But anything that we would squeeze nowadays for juice would be prohibited. Mide rabbanan. Okay. Let's go on in the Shulchan Aruch. Dalit. Mutar lishchot eshkol anavim letoch kideira sheyesh bat tavshio. You can take a cluster of grapes and squeeze it into a pot that has food in it. Kidei letakein ha'ochel.
As a seasoning.
Right, as a seasoning. Haba le'ochel uke'ochel dami. Okay, since it becomes a seasoning for the food, it becomes like a condiment to the food, and therefore it's permitted. Aval imein batashil, but if there's no food in there, then it's asur, then it's prohibited. So where did Rabbi Yosef Kara get this from? From the Rambam. He saw it in the Rambam, so he quoted the Rambam verbatim. That is the halacha. You could theoretically squeeze the grapes into your fruit salad and have a fun time. Yeah?
If you want to squeeze like a lemon. Right.
Well, we didn't talk about lemon. We talked about grapes.
Onto your salad.
Correct.
And that will be okay, but if you want to into your tea, that would not be
okay. Excellent. Very good. Let's see in a second. Actually, the Shacharat doesn't seem to say that way. What?
The tea is good.
No.
No, but it's a drink.
There's a difference because the... Well, let's see in a second before... I'd rather read it inside.
You're putting it to the taste. You're not putting it in
to
the drink.
Let's look at Vav, okay? Vav says, Mutar lishchot limunish. What's limunish? Lemon.
What's lishchot?
Lishchot. Well, that's Yiddish, right? What is lishchot?
To squeeze.
So apparently at face value, what are the parameters of this permissibility? What? What does it sound
into
like?
Liquid.
Salad.
What does it say?
Nothing.
Right, which seems to imply.
You can do it on anything.
So do it into anything. Right.
If you're doing it to flavor.
No, that's not what he says. What do you see that?
Love.
This is the whole simon. Mutar lishchot limunish. You're allowed to squeeze lemon. Don't get ahead of yourself. Hold on a second. Okay? You're allowed to squeeze lemon. Now, if I fast forward from the 15th century to Rabbi Ribiot, one may not squeeze a fresh lemon into a glass of tea.
You're not?
One may not squeeze a fresh lemon into a glass of tea. Just say, hold on. Didn't he read the Shulchan Aruch? The Shulchan Aruch just says, I can. So how come he's saying that I can't? And the reason is because he read the Mishnah Berura. Okay, the Mishnah Berura says the following. Mishnah Berura was written by the Chafetz Chaim about 100 years ago, and a little less even. He says the following. Lishchot lemonish ubilishonenu, in our language, in the Mishnah Berura, see that those long columns that I didn't read most of? See which has Vav, the big Vav, on the second column?
Yep.
Good, cut that. Lishchot lemonish ubilishonenu titrin. What is titrin?
Citrus.
Right. He says, "V'hainu afilu l'mashkin, even into drinks. V'af k'derech l'shachtan b'chol, even squeezing the normal way. Why? Kevan, because she'ain derech l'klal l'shachtan l'shalach mashke, ela l'tabel bo ochel. Because in the times of the Shulchan Aruch, they never squeezed lemon for liquid. Only for food. It was only a food condiment. So what they would do is." They would take their lemon and squeeze it. Into their salad. This is not so crazy. People do that all the time. Lemon juice and oil or whatever.
Yeah.
Or fish. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's all they would use it for. But the Mishnah Berurah says there's a problem. Okay, one second. Skip down to the little chavvah. Okay, skip down. Mm-hmm. In halfway down, it says ulefizeh. Skip down to the little chavvah, ulefizeh. In the about halfway down. Everybody got it?
Yep.
So lefizeh, based on this, that the fact that that's what they would use it for, bizman hazeh today, sheyadua shememalin chaviyot lemeot lishtos in punch. The Asian makomot, punch, right? What do they do? It was popular to take lemons, squeeze them out, put them in barrels, add water, add a ton of sugar, and make punch.
Lemonade.
Right? Oh, lemonade. Now, why in the times of Rabbi Yosef Karo would they not do that, do you think?
Because they start squeezing the lemon, and then it's going to be
I'm gonna guess.
Lemon juice.
Here's what I'm guessing. How many lemons do you need in order to make lemonade?
Oh,
tremendous
amount.
Yeah. That's fun. How many lemons can you get from one place to another? So maybe they didn't have access to lemons, and it was considered a delicacy that they would save as a condiment on their food. I'm theorizing.
Where they had lots of lemons.
So maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I have no idea. I made it up.
What was the century?
16th century. There we go. I'm right again. 16th century, they didn't have a lot of lemons. They didn't. I'm sure not. Right.
What? Sugar might have been very dear.
Oh, sugar. Okay, so I'm going to divulge a piece of personal information. Mm-hmm. I'm on a diet called Sugar Busters, right? Why are you laughing? It's called Sugar Busters.
Yeah.
It's a serious diet, and the whole point of the diet is that our human body was not made to consume the quantities of sugar that we consume.
Mm-hmm.
Until they had refined sugar, I think you're right, there was no such thing as refined sugar, and there was no way to really sweeten it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, until they took sugar cane, and what do you do? You crush it up and boil it down. Right, so that wasn't available anywhere. Who had sugar cane?
In the
kings. And what did kings have? What happened to them?
They got gout.
They got gout and they died. Right, that's exactly what happened to them.
They used honey if they could get it.
They used people if they could get it. Why do you think it was such a delicacy to have honey on Rosh Hashanah? Because one time a year you should have sweet food. What does everybody eat the rest of the time? Nothing.
Because our body rabbi, everyone's familiar to find out that sugar is good for your health.
maybe. I don't know. Anyway, so that's the whole concept of the diet. The human body was not made, and this is why you don't need the science to tell you empirically true to consume just gallons and gallons of sugar. Anyway, that's my little plug to my diet. Anyway, therefore, so what would they do? They would make punch. Therefore, tzarich iyun gadol. Tzarich iyun gadol is the halachic way of saying, I don't really think it's true that. Tzarich iyun gadol means I need to look very carefully to discover im mutar l'shachtan b'shabbat l'toch mashkeh, if it would really be permitted nowadays to squeeze it into the drink. De'efshar, because it's possible, de'damei l'tutim v'rimonim. It's really like the halachic, like the berries and the pomegranates. Why? Therefore, but he gives you an answer. What if I want to have my tea with lemon? So what can you do? Yeah.
By the concentration.
It's not. Don't get me wrong. It's not as good.
It's not as good.
But when you
eat it, you can't have your
idea.
We squeeze it before shot.
Okay. What? Oh, very good answer. Put a slice in. It'll work, but over time. The alkane. Look what he says to do. Sharich li zahir. Be careful. She yischot mikodem al hatsukar bifnei atzma. Squeeze it on the squeeze your lemon. Take your lemon. Squeeze it into your. I should have got a sugar packet. Squeeze it into your sugar.
Yeah,
am I allowed to squeeze lemon into sugar?
Yeah.
Why? Because it's a food. The habe kemaske habal leechol, because then it's like into the food. The chayim l'shachto l'tavshir, you can do it into a food. It's certainly permitted. So, am I allowed to squeeze lemon into my salad or onto my fish?
Yeah.
Certainly can. Can I squeeze it into my tea?
No,
that you can't do on Shabbos. And that's the difference between one and the other. One is considered shchita, squeezing. You're transforming it into a liquid. And one is keeping it as a condiment to food. So, when you get a piece of fish, ask for that slice of lemon and squeeze it on it, and it really is good. I do it all the time. You're about to see it. What? And then put the fish into your tea. And you have fish and tea. You have fish and tea. I got to tell you, Gene, I never would have thought of that solution.
I come from a house where fish isn't eaten.
Really?
Oh,
okay, turn to page 4. Oh, I gave you the Bria Tzinelis thing. Wow, you don't need page 4 because I told you the whole thing. Okay, you can read it on your own and figure it out on your own. And based on this, so now that we know that the act of squeezing is a prohibited action on Shabbos, next week we'll be talking about all kinds of fun stuff like baby rides and... Oh, where do the peanuts come in? Excellent question. The reason I brought the peanuts is the following. The question really is, if miscarriage is the action of removing something that's inside a husk or inside something unedible on Shabbos, how come you're allowed to eat peanuts on Shabbos?
It's like chewing an egg.
That would be more like the thread.
How come I'm allowed to peel an almond on Shabbos?
Because you don't need the crust. Here you can, you may. I mean, it's part.
Okay, and this one, you're right. This one is edible.
Edible.
Okay, well, if it's edible, so maybe the fruit, as we say, halakhically becomes the peel becomes batel, mollified vis-a-vis the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, can you say that about a peanut?
No.
You believe yourself.
Gross.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for sharing. I'm declaring it not edible. So why then am I allowed to? Am I allowed to peel a peanut on Shabbos? Okay. It's a matter of great halachic discussion, and the rabbis decide the following: that what is mefarik? What is the act of squeezing? Normally, mefarik in the weak term is I'm going to crush it in order to separate the two things, one from the other, in order to then use it in the process later on. And here, the shell, the peanut is kept in the shell, usually, most of the time, in order to, until I'm ready to eat it. And the act of peeling the peanut is considered necessary in order to eat the food.
Mm.
So therefore, the rabbis that had this opinion feel that shelling a peanut on Shabbos would not be prohibited, wouldn't fall under the halacha of mefarik. I think Moshe Feinstein might say in the tshuva.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly, has anybody ever seen a walnut in its original shell?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no.
In the original shell. Right. A walnut in its original shell, when you first grow a walnut, it's very, very thick.
Yeah.
What? And you need a hammer to open it. One would not be permitted, he writes, you're not permitted to open up a walnut on Shabbos. Yeah. On Shabbos in its original shell, because that would be mefarik, because normally they're pre-shelled, and then they're stored as such. So to remove it from that original shelling, that will be prohibited on Shabbos. But it never, no, because again, pistachios is the same way. Those are left that way until you're ready to eat it. So you're allowed to, right. And I'll just tell you, pistachios and peanuts are both allowed on Sugar Busters. Yes.
They open up in purpose. They open up in purpose without a process.
The only things he said he felt were the walnuts and the original almonds.
You can't take a nut like that with a nutcracker on Shabbos.
He said that, what do you mean?
A nut,
a regular nut, yes. But not one of those two, not the almond or the walnut in their original shell. I've never seen. I have to see what it's like. If anybody has access to a walnut in its original shell, please bring it in next week. I would be on that. No, the original, the way it grows. The way it grows, the outer shell.
The coconut in the original shell.
Right, also.
What we get in the market is coconut is already removed.
Oh, maybe not. I wouldn't know. Oh, you're right. I don't know. Okay.
Talking about those nuts in the
shell,
the big, heavy duty nuts, you can't use it.
You can't use it. No. Regular nuts, you can. I'm talking about the way you explained it. Walnuts, when they grow in a much thicker shell than the one you get. So if you had an original walnut grown in its original shell, you would not be permitted to shell it on Shabbos. I've never actually seen one, so today that wouldn't really apply. The reason I brought the peanuts is because it's an interesting discussion.
I would think the peanut would be more like the wheat.
Right, but you shave it that way until you're ready to eat it.
Huh?
You could crack it on Shabbos. Okay, have a good week, everybody, and next week, talk about dishes.